Ciao Greta.
Ciao Francesco.
Here we are, back to the Stone Age with Greta. What's your last name?
Galluzzo.
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 Ok, Greta Galluzzo from Rome.
Rome.
Ok, where do you study?
Psychology.
Where?
In Rome.
Ok, and you are doing your Erasmus here in Amsterdam?
Yeah, I'm doing all the 6 months my exchange year.
Alright, you said you studied psychology and you are in your second year?
First year of master,
first
clinical
year of master.
Psychology.
Ok, alright. Greta, I want to break the ice with a very simple and easy to handle question. What is consciousness?
What is consciousness?
Okay. To you. Not according to any scientific definition that you think that you have to abide to. What is to you your definition of consciousness? Actually, I wanted to first, sorry, I changed the question, it's related. If you had, but it's of course related, if you had to explain to ChatGPT what it feels like, how it feels like to be conscious, how would you explain it?
Okay. I don't know if like, because like, you think that consciousness is related to like being human or something. I don't know, but I think consciousness is the feeling of being present to yourself and is the feeling to like understand yourself and be conscious of what is happening inside of you. So maybe it's also related to be empathic and being in touch with your feelings and with yourself. So maybe consciousness is what like change us from animals and plants because it's understanding what we are, what is existence, what like why we are alive or something. So I think like the main difference, for example, from a human being and an animal is that a human can think about his existence, can think about what he is, why he's here, and the animal just lives without questioning his existence. So I think consciousness is like asking yourself what is happening.
All right.
In simple words, what do you think?
All right. What is happening? What is happening is also, couldn't it be that what is happening is also a question that any animals ask wonders itself when in situation of danger, because the evolution sort of led us and led animals develop in such a way that when you feel there is some danger around you, then you are wondering, any animals is wondering, or let's say not what is happening, but at least how to escape the danger. So I would say that I agree with the first part of your definition. So what is going on, or sort of as an overall view of your life, what you're doing, what is going on in your life. But what is going on related, or let's say as a response to a certain stimuli, I believe it's a trait which is encoded in how animals have developed. Because basically any, not any, but most of the forms of life have developed in such a way that they react to certain stimuli. So to ascertain what's going on in their language, for animals, for whoever, they react in a certain way. What you said, let's say, what is complementary best is, I think, and this is a question that I've been asking also with some other friends, is that probably consciousness is related also to the wonder and to the questioning of your own death, so of your own finiteness. So when you are able to wonder, or let's say question your finiteness, so I will not be here forever. Probably that's what distinguishes us between from animals.
Yes, because like what I think is that animals they react to what is happening in their life, but they don't think about their thoughts. Consciousness is also the ability we have to think about what we are thinking.
Yeah.
Think about our thoughts.
Exactly. That's
they don't think about their thinking. They only live.
Yeah.
Like they don't think I have fear. They react to fear.
Yeah.
Don't think about I'm dying. They die. So this is what makes human more complex, because because I've talked with a lot of people about this, and when I tell this my vision, they think I'm telling that animals are less smart. I'm not saying this.
It's a level of it's a complexity of their consciousness, or the depth of their consciousness.
Yes.
Okay.
They don't know that they exist, and they can't question existence, and they can see themselves out of themselves. This is an ability that only humans have.
Okay. This reminds me to the a sort of paradox I have read a book which is called Infinity and the Mind. And basically, it talks about one of the topics of discussion is the mindscape. So the set, the space of all possible thoughts that a person might have. Some of the paradoxes about like the infinitude of consciousness and of the mindscape is precisely the fact that you can say, and it is sort of a, not a mathematical construction, but sort of a, let's say, intuitive shenanigans to go about saying the mindscape is infinite. Because what you can say is the set of my, you can enclose your consciousness as the set of your thoughts. So to make it more simple, you can say, now, I am, if I'm thinking about myself, or I'm thinking about this, this is the content of my consciousness. But now, I can make one step behind me and say, me, myself, thinking about my consciousness is a thought itself.
Yes.
And it is a thought that was not there before.
Yes.
And you can make this regression infinitely many times backward.
Okay.
And this is probably, I would say, a paradoxical, yet at the same time, common feeling that we all have, and probably distinguishes us from animals. I don't think that a dolphin, for how smart a dolphin or other very smart animals might be, don't see themselves, as you said, in third person.
Yeah.
Or let's say the a nice feeling that I heard about describing being conscious is the feeling of being between your eyes.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, one of the traits that people might say, and we said, about human beings' consciousness is the awareness of death. Don't you think animals have an awareness of death? For example, when they lose a member of their family, their mother, their father, whoever, some other life that they are aficionated to, okay, don't do they suffer, and don't they experience some sort of mortality?
I think they do, but they don't think about it. Like, we made that also as a symbol. We construct our society around that. We like built religions, we built like thoughts about it. They only perceive the fear and the feeling in the time. This is the difference, I think, that human beings think about these existential things and they build a society around it. Animals react to the feeling. If, like, an animal perceives death or the loss of someone, it suffers, but it doesn't question and react to that suffering. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't become a thought, it doesn't become something that like creates something else. We discover that and we try to understand that, and the whole point of existence, in my opinion, of human being is searching for an answer. So we built an entire world and an entire society around it, around this fear. Animals perceive fear, but they don't think about the fear.
All right.
You know what I mean? What do you think?
Okay. Yeah.
It's pretty hard to understand. And I don't know. I think animals perceive the fear as we do, but they don't think in this complex way about feelings and emotions. They perceive the emotion, but the emotion doesn't arrive to that upper level.
Okay. There is also another sort of a controversial point of discussion with regards to consciousness and animal consciousness, is the fact that sometimes, and I've talked about this, I don't remember who, but this person was telling me that most of the times we tend to humanize animals and project onto them our way of living life, of perceiving things, of having subjective experience. We tend to infer that if we perceive and react to that death, the death of someone, the loss of someone, in a certain way, then for animals, it must be either similar but less complicated,
mm-hmm.
or analogous in a less complicated way. And sometimes people might say this is too reductionist because we have no idea at all of what is the consciousness of animals. We know that they can have feelings or let's say react to feelings, but we don't know at all what is going through their mind. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I also remind myself to be aware of not really trying to project my experience of as a human being onto animals, which has completely nothing to do with my kind of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yes, you're right, because like in the end we don't know what they're perceiving because they don't have like words, so like for this reason we can't know what is happening inside of them.
Yeah.
But maybe they're perceiving the world as us and we don't know it. I don't know. What do you think? Because like I don't think that like we are like smarter than animals. What do you think?
Well, it depends. It depends how you define what is smart to you. How do you define smartness, intelligence? Or actually, let's talk about what is the difference between intelligence and consciousness?
I don't know, because like I think intelligence, in my opinion, is the ability to see something that didn't exist before and to create something new. So it's the ability to like go from a point you are to a point that is not there yet.
All right.
So it's also the ability to cross some limits. But I think that intelligence in every field of like the world is like measured in a different way. I don't know. But the difference between us and animals is not intelligence, but is the fact that we can like talk and symbolize what we are thinking.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Probably that's true. Probably.
We think we are smarter only because we can say out loud is happening.
That's
true. And this is what built communities.
That is true, indeed. Because I just read a book from Lawrence Krauss, which is a famous scientist, which, little bragging moment for me, will come to talk with me on my podcast.
Really?
I said. And in this book, he says, he points out, he brings about the sort of a fact that is brought by someone else. So he mentioned this fact that a brain, the structure that you see in a brain without language, is a human brain, is not really developed after all.
Mm-hmm.
Is the capability of putting into words or describing it to language, which is
it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's actually I have never.
You never thought about it?
I mean, I thought about after I read this book, I thought about that's true. The human brain without language is
this is also
fucking out. All right, the human brain without language is not really okay. Airplane brake.
Yeah.
I've thought about that, but wait a second. Because when does language start to arise? Because I can argue, not argue, but I can think that the complexity of our consciousness has developed over the course of millions of years. All right.
Yes.
But when did in time, and probably we don't have an answer, like we surely don't, I mean I hope you do, but we surely don't have an answer to this question, but at what point the first species of hominids or
start to talk?
No, not start to talk. Started to understand their mortality, their own mortality, and their own finiteness. Like, what was it? Babylonians or way earlier, like Neanderthal or this kind of stuff? That's the thing. Emergence of questioning your own mortality arise simultaneously with the emergence of language? Because if that is the case, it would be pretty nice. But I don't really think that's the case.
So I think that like from the beginning of humanity, like people start questioning things and then they developed words to explain.
Okay, but wait a second. Humanity, what is humanity? Like, is it Homo sapiens sapiens?
Yes.
Okay. So Homo sapiens sapiens Actually, sorry, I just reminded of another fact, and this I heard it in either in a podcast or in a YouTube video, that they were saying the first person, the first type of man that knew about his own mortality and questioned about it, its own finiteness was the Homo sapiens sapiens, and not only Homo sapiens, because they said Homo sapiens was the man who knew.
Uh-huh.
Homo sapiens sapiens, sapiens sapiens, uh-huh, is the man who knew he knew.
Okay.
All right. Okay. And that's when I heard it, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Again, flight, airplane,
yeah,
we're break.
In an airport. Yeah, I was thinking,
we can actually see it. Oh yeah, fucking dope. It's there. Nice.
Do you think like consciousness is related to words, to putting into words what you're feeling?
Okay, no, because I don't believe consciousness is related to, okay, let's put it this way. It is surely fostered in the sense that a certain level of complexity in life, so you have life, okay, the most fundamental molecules for life, you give them more and more complexity, they will develop a more and more sophisticated form of consciousness.
Okay.
But if you just give life algae, fungi, any very basic form of life, but they are in a very basic ground state, their level of complexity does not increase, thus their level of consciousness does not arise. And that's pretty much what I believe is the case. I don't know if that is accurate. Maybe it is not, because again, in this thought, like while doing this thought, I am again projecting my human experience onto fungi and algae. Okay.
Yes.
That's the thing. But it's sort of impossible not to do it.
Yeah, I was thinking this, like, how can we not project? Because like our way of perceiving life is the only thing we have.
Yeah.
Also, my perception of life can be different from yours. And we think that every human being have the same perception. But in the end, what I was thinking, the reason why we know that our experience is similar is for language, because we can talk about our experience,
yeah,
and we can understand what we are perceiving in the real world. And so this is what builds connection between human beings. And I think this is also what like builds empathy, because you understand other people's feelings because you connect with them with words and you can understand them better.
Okay, wait.
But this is another...
Wait, okay, because empathy, wouldn't be that empathy or a form of empathy is a shared feeling by animals? Because like, for example, if you have two animals, which are... there is an animal which is... okay, I don't know. There is someone who is struggling, he's stuck in a cave or whatever it is. Other animals, likely of their own species, of the same species, will try to help. It seems to be the case. Okay, so what is there? Is an animal
I
sort of empathy?
Different. Maybe the animals, this is like more a survival input. Like they try to help because like they want their group to be safe.
Okay.
Like right. Like the brain, also our brain is built for survival. Like we are settled to survive. So we have this instinct that protects us from that, I think.
Okay.
But empathy is the perception, is like, I can understand what you're feeling and I feel your feeling as they're mine. So it's the ability of like feeling your feelings inside of me.
Yeah.
And it's a complex thing that I think most animals have empathy, especially like the animals that live with humans, for example. Now dogs live so much. For example, I have a dog, and I can see that he's like changing while standing with us. I was we were talking about this also with like some professor in psychology, that the fact that we are like making live some animals with us are making them more humanized, you know.
Yeah.
Because like they're taking some things from us and they're like understanding how to live with us.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's complex.
Oh, well, sure it is. Do you what is the difference between consciousness and awareness?
Okay, maybe awareness is I am aware of what is happening right now. Consciousness is I'm conscious of what I am and what is for me the meaning.
Okay, wait. Describe consciousness without using the word conscious and describe awareness without using the word aware.
Okay. For me, the first one is I'm in touch with the fact of being alive and I know what does it mean for me being alive and being a human being and having thoughts.
Okay.
And the second one is I'm in touch with what is happening right now. But I don't really know the like real like definition.
No. I'm asking like, according to you. I'm asking according to you. All right.
What do you think they are?
Yeah, consciousness is this sense of self, the sense of probably consciousness is precisely the definition of being able to regress. All right, sorry for the interruption. Blow of wind disrupted our episode. Now, my definition of consciousness was the sense of self and the sense of being getting to regress behind your eyes infinitely many times. Because I can make a step behind me as many times as I want, as many times as I can state that I can regress. Awareness is the sensation of knowing, or let's say the illusion of knowing what is going on. The illusion of knowing your surrounding, your life, your environment, whatever properties that characterizes you and your life.
I have a question that is not really related, but I was thinking about this question last time.
Uh-huh.
What is for you, Max? And why, like, what one thing that I have always like thought in my life? Do you think that maths is something that we created to describe the universe and the world around us?
Nice.
Or we are finding maths? Because this is really related to, for me, to what is existence. Like, is like that we created this or like we are finding answers somewhere that are already there?
All right.
How maths is related, also something that really interests me, how maths is related to physics and like what we're discovering that is like,
yeah.
Do you have the answer?
All right. So basically the recap of the question was, what is math invented or discovered?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So basically this is a very big question, which of course, lies at the center of a discussion for many debates. My intuition, or at least what my reasoning came to be, is that, okay, mathematics is built in this way. Do you know what an axiom is?
Axiom.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Okay. Well, an axiom, I would say it. An axiom is a self-evident truth. So it's a statement about things which does not require a proof. So it's something that is, let's say, brutally said, it's something that is obvious. All right? I don't know. What is obvious to you?
Nothing. Like.
All right. All right. Okay. Let's put it this way.
Okay.
Okay. When building a mathematical theory, any branch of mathematics, you start from the self-evident truth of this theory, or at least of this branch, of this area of mathematics. So, axioms, as you might agree with me, are pretty much arbitrary, right? Like, we are just deciding them. They are, of course, it's not that we decide on whatever. We decide based on our common intuition, like on what is intuitive and obvious for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The thing is that this intuition and this obviousness depends on our intuition, right? Our intuition is based on what the human mind finds intuitive. So it truly depends on how we humans have developed, on what our mind came to consider intuitive, obvious, right? But the thing is, when you are finding out some new mathematical reality, some new mathematical statement or theorem, the feeling that you have, it's that of, it can be either of invention, because sometimes you are truly inventing objects that you need for your purposes, but sometimes you feel like that you are just discovering new things about the world, new things about mathematics, how things work. So what I came to conclude is that we invent the axioms, or in a sense, we invent the fundamentals, the fundamentals. We invent the foundations of mathematics. So we invent the axioms and we discover their consequences. That's sort of the view that I came to have, which sort of merges, coalesces both views. So that of invention and that of discovery. Because it is also true that if you change the axioms, what you discover is different. So there is not an objective mathematical reality which works for every axiom that you have. Depending on the axiom, you discover a different mathematical reality.
Okay.
And that's a different mathematical universe. Okay. And that's, like, for example, a very simple example is in geometry. If you, like, do you know what are parallel lines?
Mm-hmm.
Parallel lines are lines which never meet.
Okay.
Euclid posited the axiom that in space, there can only be two parallel lines. Like, for example, if you have a line going this way, there is only one line which is parallel to it.
Mm-hmm.
Only one. Because otherwise, if there are two lines, then one must be crossing it.
Okay.
There cannot be. Okay. Or either it crosses it, or it's the same line which is parallel to it. All right. If you change this axiom, if you change Euclid's parallel postulate, you will end up with parallel lines which intersect one time, or parallel lines that intersect two times, for example. Okay, so any type of geometries that you get out of changing, just by changing this axiom, are completely different. And they are different mathematical realities that you are discovering. Then, so that's, at least, yeah, that's the view I came to have.
But we found, some rules in maths that then were applicable to reality. I was thinking, so maybe maths is a language we found to describe what we have in reality, but why is so accurate?
That's a very nice question. I would say maths is a language that we found the language to communicate between us.
Mm-hmm.
Have we found it? Like Italian, English, or any language, let's say, the set of languages to communicate between human beings.
Have we found it, or
is it invented? Like, if we said blah instead of hello, would it be, like, and we just agree that blah means hello?
Okay.
Would it be invented or discovered?
I think we found voice. Like,
okay, but the language itself.
The language itself is built because it's a community language.
So it's invented.
Yes.
All right. That's precisely what I believe with mathematics. Maths is a different language that we use to understand the every process and phenomena that happens around us. And that's simply the case. That's simply it. It's a different language. We created it, okay? And we are simply discovering what it's being able to explain.
Okay.
of our physical reality and of every possible mathematical reality, because maths not only talks about this physical reality, maths talk about countless other possible realities. And this, the example that I told you about, Euclidean geometry, where two parallel lines never meet. This is the case in the world, in our universe. If you shoot two parallel lines, they will never meet. Because, apparently, the geometry locally here in this patch of the world and of the universe seems to be flat. We know, we can describe, we can make up mathematical universes that have hyperbolic geometry and parallel lines meet one time. Mm-hmm. Or at least cross, anyway. Okay. So, but we don't experience that. So, yeah. It's just a language.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much just a language which...
And it's getting more complex every time.
Oh, yeah. Like our language.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting just more complex.
But our language is kind of set. Maybe we can discover more words. But our language...
What do you mean by set?
I mean that, like, the languages we have are done. Maybe we can invent some new words, but we're not discovering or creating new languages.
Well,
maths is like...
Okay. Wait a second. But don't you believe that while the history of mankind proceeds, we are describing more and more things that we have not described in the past?
Yeah.
Because 200 years ago, we were not describing the advent of smartphones. 200 years ago, we have not... we were not explaining what we are explaining now. Like, we were not using the language. We're not using the language. We were not using the language to describe what we are now describing. Because what is happening, because we describe what happens, mm-hmm. right? And what happens is evolving, is changing, right? And that's how I see it with mathematics. The mathematical world is developing. New things are being created. New things, let's say, discovered. And that's precisely the same thing. We are simply describing what we experience of new.
Mm-hmm.
Both for the mathematical world and for the describable world through words.
But do you think that there are some people that... Why some people can understand better maths than others? Why some people...
It is simply genetic predisposition, I believe. It is simply how the brain is built. Some brainers are more analytical than others and are more predisposed to mathematical discovery and not mathematical discovery, to a mathematical approach of questioning reality and of questioning their surrounding.
Okay.
Like there are people that are very good in approaching and describing their reality through drawings. Leonardo da Vinci. Leonardo da Vinci was a genius in drawing. Okay, many other things, but was a complete master in drawing, and that was his method of questioning and depicting his reality, describing what was happening around him. And that's the thing, it is simply a predisposition of your brain. Then, I also believe that you can, there are certain features of the human brain that you can train, and that you can, you can work on. Your predisposition to mathematics can evolve and change throughout time. It's not fixed, luckily. So, but that not only for mathematics, that is for drawing, for playing an instrument, for pretty much everything.
Yes, I think this is very important to say because, like, sometimes in school, you're convinced that if you're not
good in maths,
not talented, like, you're not naturally talented in something, you could never achieve it.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to understand if you see the meaning in something and if you like something enough to train yourself to understand it. Because this is something that I always struggled with, like convincing myself that if I was not naturally talented, I could not achieve some things. And then later in life, I understood that you have to understand if you like something enough to also like overcome that limit, you know? of not being naturally talented. So this is another thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. Absolutely. That's called growth mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So if you believe you can do
yes
something, if you believe you can achieve what you want to achieve, you put in the effort. The yeah. effort will be enough. It has to be, of course, combined with discipline and
yes.
dedication. Yeah.
I also believe that, like, in our society, sometimes we have too much pressure to overcome every limit. But what once my professor said in psychology is that we have also to accept, because, like, as the society grows, we think that we can overcome everything and we can surpass every limit. But the fact that we have limits and that there are some things we can do better than the others is something that we have to normalize. Because sometimes, I think especially in our generation and in our society, we tend to want to only become bigger and we don't find our voice and what's like our real passion and interest. I don't know what you think, because...
All right. Like, this is an interesting question, but the thing is, relating to this, I want to ask you a question regarding the overcoming of limits. Now, what do you think of the genetic, biological modification of human beings and sort of the, let's say, the biological engineering of human beings in order to achieve a higher level of consciousness? Meaning, we can train people to be more present in their life, more aware of their own existence, their own death, a greater acceptance of their own mortality, of what characterizes them as humans, and in general, higher brain powers. What if, like, my question is, what if this is the next step to achieve? Because as we said, consciousness has gone through the development, right? From the first life forms until now, consciousness has undergone a development. All right, what if this is the next step?
I haven't heard about this. You think that with some genetic modification, we can make our consciousness bigger? This is what they are studying?
No. What I am... Okay, so basically now, there are a lot of biological... Like, you can... Okay, let's say the science of biomedical engineering
okay.
is developing very rapidly. Like, I have a flowmate of mine, Penelope. Hi, Penelope. That is, and we talk a lot about this. And basically, you can, through genetic modification, so basically you take the DNA, I don't remember precisely how you do it, but you can sort of, let's say, said brutally, you modify... a part of the DNA, which is the placeholder of an illness that you are predisposed to, you replace that part of the DNA with a stronger
right.
part of the DNA. Now, it's not right, but it gives the idea. And you can, you get somewhat rid of the weakness, your predisposition to that illness. Now, this... biomedical engineering for the purpose of being physically stronger, live more years, and this kind of stuff. You can do that with the brain, right? And that's precisely what I think. If you do that with the brain, you enhance the capabilities of the brain. So not only not only how much information can you stuff in the brain, can you remember, can you learn in a short amount of time, but a more expanded sense of self.
Okay, in my opinion, we don't need this more extended sense of self.
Why not?
Because I think we arrive at a point where, like, we have too much information. We have too much awareness of everything.
Okay, but what if this genetic modification that I'm talking about go to the enhancement of the processing of this huge amount of information, which leads, because I agree with you that the amount of information that has been created has developed far more rapidly than the development of our brain. And now our brain somewhat feels overwhelmed, because now, like, hundreds of years ago, okay, a scientist could be doing cutting edge research in astronomy, biology, physics, mathematics, all at the same time. Now you cannot do that. If you specialize, you specialize in a very niche and cutting edge area of a certain discipline. Okay, so, and in general, the amount of information about everything has increased astoundingly. Now, if you increase the capability of the brain to process this huge amount of information and to make something out of it, let's put it this way, a sort of conscious ChatGPT. So you, let's put it this way, you give, we have a shit amount of information and we are not lost in it. We can simply process it better.
Okay. I don't know if I'm 100% like sure about, like, if I'm 100% like, if I think it's a good thing, because what I was thinking while we were talking is that we always search for, like, we always search for progress, also in med, and this is like normal because we search for answers and we search for a way to make life longer. But I think also the risk of the this kind of mindset is that we don't accept that what makes us human is that we have limitations, you know? So I don't think that understand everything, coming to the point that we process everything in a perfect way is the right choice, because it's like we want to become robot ourselves, like we want to become perfect and we want to become unbeatable, you know what I mean? But this is not what we are made for. I don't know, but this is my personal vision. I feel sometimes that we are like searching for this kind of progress without understanding that the fact of being limited is what makes us human.
Yeah, I completely...
The fact that we have a limited body, a limited amount of time, this is what makes us human, you know? And if we arrive to that infinite, like, we don't even know what it is.
Okay, wait. I don't, when I talk about biologically engineering human brains, I don't want to achieve sort of the perfection or the a godlike state mind. Simply, okay, let's put it this way. We, humans of the 21st century, if we go back in time to the primitive form of the Homo sapiens sapiens or Homo Neanderthal, we honestly, like, okay, maybe not, because again, I am talking from the perspective of a human, but we probably would resemble, to their eyes, we would be sort of a god. Because we are super smart, we are capable of a mental process, which they cannot even think of, right? Which has developed through millions of years, right? So we would be god to them, okay? We would be saying, we would be seen as a superior entity. And that's precisely the step that I envision. Not... Okay. Achieving the god that we think, omniscient, omnipotent, knowing everything in 1 second at the same time, but simply a higher process.
Yes, you think we can use science to like take this step that we took in millions of years and make it like smaller?
Yes, shorter. Make it such that in... sorry, not make such a... Speed it up...
I think this is amazing, but the problem is that humans can't control themselves. So everything good we did turned out to be also our worst scenario.
Yeah,
scenario.
That's true.
So my fear is that as we go up, as we become more aware of what reality is, we become also more aware of how to destroy it, you know? That is kind of what is happening. So this is the problem. There are some people that want to use science and awareness to make good actions, and there are some people that will use it to destroy, but this is like a really complex topic.
All right.
And...
Okay. With regards to the destruction of humankind, I want to ask you a question. Probably in some world, maybe if we rerun the history of the planet Earth, backward, and we run it again. Maybe some species of dinosaurs, of some species of crocodile, I don't know what animals. Maybe they never achieve consciousness. Let's say that humans do not develop, or let's say a higher sense, higher consciousness
a higher form of complexity like us does not develop, there are only somewhat primitive animals like crocodile, these kind of animals. Okay. Maybe they do last for millions of years, for billions of years, because their planet allows so, and they do not destroy themselves. They simply continue according to the, how do you say, their law of survival, their instincts of survival, and they last millions of years. On the contrary, we humans have emerged in this planet, and after achieving our sense of consciousness, we might, and to be honest, I believe in so, we might be able to destroy, no, actually, okay, hopefully not, but we might be able to destroy ourselves and the whole intelligence there is in this planet. So now I ask you, is consciousness a good or a bad thing?
I don't know. I think that everything that is good can be also bad, but we have to train ourselves to make it good. Consciousness is good because if I could choose, like, to not have it, I will choose to have it, consciousness, also if I'm suffering. There are some people that sometimes tell me I would prefer to not being that conscious and not feeling sufferance. I prefer to perceive all of this, to question my existence every time. But of course, consciousness opens a lot of doubts that not everyone can handle. And some people, to find answers, also find like bad like resolutions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So in my opinion, consciousness is a good thing, but we have to train ourselves how to handle all of these like informations. So if like we understand more things, we have to understand also how to handle all of these informations. But it's also hard to understand what is good and what is bad in this reality, you know?
Okay, but I have two questions then. Do you... Okay, first of all, okay, one question first. What is good and bad?
This is something I always think about. Does like good and bad exist, or is something that we created? This is like my main question.
Exactly. So is there a universal ethic and moral, or is everything purely subjective?
I don't really know. But also in math we have positive and negative, no?
Sorry?
Also in math we have like positive and negative. It's not like...
Why? What do you mean?
No, I'm thinking that are like the two opposite part, like two are not like that. The world is built for like two opposite, like the moon and the sun,
yeah.
The night.
It's a spectrum. It's a spectrum.
Yes.
Alright.
So I don't understand if it's something that we perceive because we have these two things inside of us, or is the world that is built in this contradiction. But this is like, I think, the questions that the humanity try to answer from a lot of times, like.
Okay, but then.
In my opinion, we created ethics. We created laws. We created.
But is there a universal ethic and morality, or every morality that you can think of is subjective, and the validity of it depends on the person questioning it? Because killing. For us humans, it's not acceptable and it's not ethical. It's not moral, right? Sure. But for any animal who is fighting for survival, killing is part of nature. It's part of their living. And is not questioned as something unethical. Probably there does not even exist such a thing as ethic for animals. So yeah, that's my point. Yeah, that's my point. The thing is, you can see this, especially... when you talk about even humans.
Yeah, I think that we have this strong ethics for the fact that we are conscious about our existence, so we are more attached to our life and our existence. For this reason, we perceive bad and good. But if you think about it, like, how can we know that killing is really bad? Like, we think that killing is bad because we perceive life and death. And we give a meaning to it because we are conscious. So we came back to the initial point. But in truth, we don't know what is really good or bad. We don't know.
Okay.
So I think that ethics is something that we created maybe to protect the human nature. I don't know.
And are human beings intrinsically good or bad?
I think there are some people that are intrinsically
good. No. Are human beings intrinsically good or bad? Is the humankind intrinsically good or bad?
I think the humankind thinks about his own survival first. And thinking about your own survival makes you good when you need to be good and bad when you need to be bad, you know?
All right. Okay, so basically you're saying that also animals in this regard are both and neither at the same time.
Yeah, like animals don't think I'm good or bad. The animals need to survive, eat someone. Like, doesn't think I'm good, I'm bad. It just does it because it's an animal. And we don't question this thing. We only protect ourselves from the animal because we know that we can control it, you know? We don't think that the animal is bad because we know that it's an animal and we know that it doesn't have this kind of processing. So we don't think that he have to understand what being good is. We think this about humans because we know that humans have consciousness and they can perceive sufferance. But this...
Wait. Also, animals can perceive sufferance. Can they?
They can. They can't think about sufferance as we do.
Okay, but still they perceive it. So, like, their pain... Okay, I'm not saying probably, but... How can the pain of an animal be different than the pain I can have when losing a person in my life?
I think the pain is the same. But the fact that you can think about that loss that you had your entire life and have this process of thinking makes it not bigger. With like this, I'm not saying that they suffer less. But I think they have a more instinctual way of feel things. Maybe it's even a better thing because they feel things where when they need to. They feel fear when there is an actual fear. They feel pain when there is an actual fact. We perceive fear and pain more, not more, but like more intensified for our way of thinking, and this is also what is making like mental illness worse, you know. But it's a really complex.
Any question from the public? We don't have questions from the public, unfortunately.
I don't know. I don't think that our sufferance is like bigger. I think it's only different because we have words to describe it. And it's also a big part of our existence. Because we are also questioning a lot why sufferance exists. As we question why good, like if bad or good exists, we are also questioning happiness and sufferance. Do you think that you can have like happiness without sufferance? You look, there are always two opposites.
I think there can be happiness without suffering in a higher state of consciousness, which is the, or awareness, which is the sort of awareness that people like Buddha or Jesus Christ achieved. Their mental state was devoid of sufferance and misery. They were not feeling sad or angry or upset about anything. They were simply people filled with compassion and love for every human being.
Mm-hmm.
And this sense of consciousness is devoid of suffering. So I think there is, and the sort of consciousness was. Sorry, they were what we would say as happy. They were not the happy we mean today. So happy because you found you won the lottery. They were not that happy. Their happiness was a higher form of happiness. Was a peace, a happiness that derived from the peace of the purity of their heart and mind,
mm-hmm.
Which is not describable, which is really not, cannot put into word. It's something that goes beyond mind and matter.
Cool.
End of the story. No, it is, I'd say, I really think, yeah, there is not much that we can do about it to describe what these people felt and the mental states that these people achieved, because they simply transcend language itself, because language itself is dependent on the mind-matter relation that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Because language developed with the mind, the relation between mind and matter, they transcended this relation. They went over this relation and they achieved full liberation and mm-hmm. yeah, the enlightenment from all human suffering.
Mm-hmm. So, like, you would choose to not experience sufferance at all if you could? Because for me, I saw sufferance like something that really helped me perceiving also this state of calmness.
How?
This is my personal vision, but I also see sufferance.
Wait, how?
How? Because now that I know how to deal also with the sufferance, I know also to deal with positive, because we always think that positive feelings are not hard to handle. But what I was also telling you last time, also positive feelings can be overwhelming if you don't know how to stay in touch with them.
True.
So the way I understood how to deal with my sufferance also helped me understood how to deal with my happiness, because also happiness is scary. In fact, we don't have to search for happiness, but for calmness, resolution, understanding. And the way you understand your pain also helps you understand yourself in general. And everything is part of yourself. So when you did that process, you're also more able to go to the other side. But this was my personal experience. So if I could choose, I would go back again to that sufferance. But depends on what sufferings we're talking about, because there are some sufferings that are like, I was talking with this with my best friend. She told me like, one thing is like emotional sufferings. One thing is real illness. One thing is the war. There are some things that are only dark. There is no positive way. There is no way to really deal with it. We just try to find a meaning because we have to, but there are some aspects of life that are only dark, you know. So this is what I think.
All right. I might not agree with this view. Mm. Because, okay, there is a sort of a fiaba, how do you call it? A fairy tale. I mean, fairy tale, a story, which I have heard on YouTube and kind of impressed me. And this fairy tale, if I remember correctly, I mean, the meaning is pretty much this, but I don't remember the precise specification of the story. So there is a village, and in this village there is an old man with his son. His son is working in the land of the man. And the old man needs the son to work in the land. When walking the land, the son breaks, I don't know, like his leg. And then people of the village come along the old man and say, oh, that's unlucky that your son broke his leg. And he says, well, maybe. Then after the son heal and can go back work the land, he breaks again the leg. Or whatever else. He's not able to work anymore. And people come along again and say, oh, that's... Oh, actually, sorry, remember, the second time, he didn't break his leg. He got lucky because he received either an amount of money or basically he found a horse with which he could work the land better. And so his improvement, the improvement of work for the young man could be reflected on working the land. And so people come along and compliment the old man, saying, oh, you're lucky, because now your son can work land. So basically, to summarize, because I made a fucking mess, the first time the son breaks his leg and cannot work land anymore. And people come along and say, oh, that's a shame. The second time, the son finds a horse and he can work the land better. And people come along and say, congrats, that's lucky. And the old man again says, well, we will see. While working the land with the horse, or the cow, or whichever fucking animal you want, the son, the young man again breaks his leg, and people come along again and say, oh, that's unlucky. And the old man says again, well, maybe. After some days, the army comes along the village to rescue people for the war, to rescue soldiers for the war. And the young man, with his leg broken, cannot be inscribed in the army. So what is the moral of this story? Is that there is no such thing as good or bad, because you never know how an event will unfold in your life and which consequences will have in your life. And that's precisely how I think about it. Even the most tragic... The uttermost tragic episodes of life might be excluded, but I do believe that it's a very countable, a very small countable number of such episodes, because all the rest cannot really be said to be good or bad. You have to wait for life to unfold and see what are the consequences of it.
Okay, this is 100% my vision of life, because everything bad that happened in my life helped me arrive to this point. But I also think that we have the... like, we are lucky because we have the opportunity to have, for now, a life that we see, that have a future, like, after us. But there are some things that I'm also trying to think, like, because I always think there is always a positive part, but there are some things that I can't really explain to myself. For example, illness, war. There will be someone that will learn from it, but we are sacrificing a big part, and a big part of the world is suffering, to understand something that we don't even know that if you will ever understand, but this is something really complex. I think that in our personal life and the way we live life, this is really true, but we have the like fortune to live not a standardized life, but a life that is more linear than other life that we're seeing in this moment. But I think these are questions that the whole humanity is trying to answer from a lifetime, but there is not really an answer, you know, from that kind of sufferance. I don't know, what do you think about it?
Say again, what is your point?
I think that we can try to see the positive in everything, but there are some things in life, especially right now, that are only bad. And I think we are scared of accepting how bad the human being can be, because it's something we can't really control and we don't have an answer.
Okay, true. But then this goes against the fact that consciousness is a good thing. Because if consciousness is an intrinsic property of human beings, then human beings are, according to what you just said, mysterious, doubtful, and not predictable, which is true. And according to your view, all of these characteristics makes it such that it's scary.
Yes, this is why we need laws.
Okay, but laws are made by human beings.
Laws are made to the human beings we think we are the good ones. Yeah. That we think are the, like, safe ones.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, like, I don't know. I think consciousness can be a good thing in the good ends. What I said in the beginning, like, consciousness can be a good thing in the good ends, but can be a bad thing. But all...
Everyone has consciousness. So the thing is, that consciousness is in the hand of everyone. Like, every human being has consciousness.
Mm-hmm. There are some people that think that some actions are good, and some people that think that some actions are good and some actions are bad, and some people that don't think so. Someone that kills someone else, maybe they understand it's something seen, like they understand that it's something that is seen as something bad, but they don't care because they want to do that action, you know? There are some people that can control themselves and they can understand and they can perceive that something is seen as bad and they really feel that it's bad. And some people that have a different perception, we call them crazy, we call them ill, but I don't know.
And what is what has possibly gone wrong in the subjective experience of a human being that led this human being to act as insane compared to the human standard of good and bad?
Okay.
How can it be that within the human race there are such opposite and polarized behavior as people killing and causing harm to other beings?
I think that for people that kill someone else, they are people that like have experienced, in my opinion, a level of suffering that made them not perceiving some limits.
Oh, you say like less, with a higher level of, with a higher tolerance of suffering?
No, what I say is that they perceive a level of suffering that made them arrive to the point that they not perceive empathy anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. Because to arrive to the point that you can kill someone, you don't perceive empathy as a people that perceive empathy does. Because if you kill someone, you have to not perceive, or if you perceive the pain of that person, it's even worse. Because you don't get scared of giving that much pain. So we are talking of people that, in our vision of life, are ill, like people that are not like stable or mentally stable.
Yeah.
But it's a like big field that is also being studied. So I think for people that kill someone is another different thing. But for example, for wars and other things like that, the main thing is power. Is that there are some humans that wants to achieve power no matter what. They want to become superlative. They want to rule the world. And to arrive to that point, someone have to suffer. So you ask me, there is good or bad. And like, I think that like some people choose to do bad to save themselves. Because in the end,
we are animals and our instinct of survival,
yes,
probably in extreme conditions, prevail.
Yes. There are some people that are more altruistic than others.
Okay, but what is this altruism? Or how can higher form of altruism and kindness and compassion arise in some people and not in others?
There is a big discussion if like real altruism exists.
Or isn't just a kind form of narcissism?
Yes, because like there is a big discussion if like real altruism exists or is just something people do to feel better with themselves. I think some people are just more sensible to it. Some people are more sensible to suffering, some people are more sensible to altruism. And I think it also depends on what kind of life you're living. But there are some people that will choose to die to make someone else live. And there are some people that will choose to kill the world to save themselves.
Sure, but what are the differences, or how can there be differences? Why there can be differences in the level of altruism and compassion in different human beings? Do you think it's due to biological and genetic predisposition, or also the environment that you have been grown up and that you have been raised into,
I think,
plays a role.
Okay, in psychology in general, everything is always a mix. Like biology and environment always play a part. It's never one of them.
Okay.
We say that you can have a predisposition and then the environment you grow in highlight that predisposition.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are some people that are more sensible to some things. For example, I'm like more sensible to emotions. I'm born with this. Okay. But what happened in my life made me even more sensible. If like, for example, if I would like grow up in another family, maybe I wouldn't be like this. So I think it's always a mix. And I really think that what happened in your life plays like a central role for me.
Do you think... Oh, no, sorry. What does it feel like to be alive?
For me?
Yeah.
In what's like, what I think about my existence or...
When you wake up and you say, I am existing right now.
For me,
why do you say such a thing when you wake up?
Why? Because I know that I'm alive because like...
How do you know?
I'm not always 100% sure. Sometimes I think maybe I'm dreaming. This happens to everyone. I know because I interact with people. I think this is also...
Okay, but if there is someone that is far deep into the nature and has no human interaction, how can this person know that he's alive?
I think every one of us sometimes questions if we are really alive, but we know that we are alive from the moment that we perceive ourselves. I can touch myself, I can feel my body, I can feel my existence into the world. I can feel that I'm shaping the world around me, moving. So I know that I'm alive because I feel my presence into the world. And this is also an important thing because like a lot of mental illness, I think they come from not perceiving yourself, not being in touch with your body, your emotions. But I had some moments in my life where I felt I was not really living and not really alive. And this was a scary point of my life because like, for example, for like some anxiety stuff, there were some periods where I felt I was not into my body. And in that moment, I started questioning like, what is like, how can you understand if like you're really living, you're not living a dream? And what I understood with time is for like, at least for me, what makes me understand that I'm really alive is interacting with other people and seeing my reflection into other people. So this is why I like social interaction that much. And this is
because they make you, they give you the confirmation that you are alive.
No. No, but this is why
they can guarantee you're not dead.
No, this is why I think that like, I know that I'm alive also if I don't interact with people now. But I think that like being perceived, like this is why I think also love is so important because this is like something they told us in psychology, like love and also like self-affirmation is so important because you perceive that someone is seeing you and this someone is seeing you and is validating your existence. You feel that your existence is happening, you know? Of course, like a man that is like in his own, know that he's alive because every man passed from being like, except like rare cases, everyone was like before into someone else's body, like your mother body, no? So like everyone passed through the experience of being touched with another human being. So every one of us like was validated in a sort of a way. And in the case you were not, like your existence was not validated, your experience deeper level of sufferance. This is what I think. What do you think?
Regarding what?
Well, like, how do you know you're alive?
All right. Ha ha ha. Probably you can already start making a distinction in the definition of being alive, because I can be alive and my existence is different than the existence of an animal, as we said. So probably the thing is that being alive, one might easily mistakenly interchange the definition of being alive with the definition of being conscious, or one can just simply state the definition of sort of the biological definition of being alive. So probably to me being alive, okay, the thing is that to me being alive, like if you think about it, to me being alive is very similar to the sensation of being aware. I am aware of my own existence. I know that I know.
Mm-hmm.
During a dream, most of the times, you are, or actually this is an analogy that I just thought about now. During a dream, or at least that's the case for me, for many other people, I think it's also the case. During a dream, you're not really questioning what you're doing. You're just simply doing. You're reacting according to the plot of the dream, which most of the times you're not really deciding, unless you're doing lucid dreams, but that is a whole different story. Okay, so most of the times what I feel like doing a dream is that I am simply going through, living through, transitioning the plot, and I am not of any stage, that's not very correct, in any of the stages, I am questioning my own existence or the reality or the actuality of what I'm doing.
This is really interesting.
I am simply living truth. The moment I stop, and actually, this is actually, oh, this is mind-boggling what I just thought about now. In a dream, the moment you ask the question, what am I doing? You are probably waking up.
Yeah.
Either physically waking up, or you are waking up in a dream and you start having a lucid dream. That's one of the time, or sorry, that's sort of a technique that you can use to have lucid dreams, lucid dreaming. If you train yourself in some certain ways, you will reach a certain stage where doing your dream, you will stop and ponder the reality of what you're doing. You will ask yourself, am I dreaming? Or am I awake?
Mm-hmm.
When we do that during real life, we give it a... Ooh, another one, wait. During life, during our progression of life, we never question whether we are alive or not. Why? Because we distinctively know the feeling of life, and we know it very distinctively,
mm-hmm,
compared to the feeling of dreaming.
Yes.
So probably I would say that being alive to me is the knowing, is the intuitive acknowledgement and perception of existence, and the not so or let's say the more is the intuitive understanding of existence, which does not require further inspection.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I am alive because I can feel it, said brutally. Okay, in a dream, if I start questioning whether I am alive or not, I awake because there is no intuitive perception of being alive.
I think this is like really interesting, and it's a good example to explain the difference between being alive and not being like present. Because like when you're dreaming, you're like responding to images, but when you're living, you're constantly going through the process of feeling and being present every moment. Maybe when we are dreaming, we are not like conscious.
No, we're not.
You're not.
Like, no, we're not. That's like, yeah, we are. I think that like scientifically,
mm-hmm,
we can say that, that when we dream, we are not conscious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can say that unless you are having a lucid dream.
The cool thing is that we realize we are dreaming when we wake up, but we realize we are living while living.
What if?
What if?
What if life came to be?
A dream.
No, what if life simply is the waking up of a sleeping from a sleeping state?
This is a theory.
Is it a theory?
There are a lot of no, I think that there are okay, there are okay, of course, a lot of theories about what life is.
Yeah.
And there is also a theory that says that it's all a video game.
What is it? What is it?
I don't know. No, I don't know the exact theory, but I know that there are some theory. We can like search it later.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some fantascientific theory, not like scientific theory, but I think there are some people that think that this can be all, this could all be a dream.
Yeah.
There are a lot of theories that I don't think this is a dream, but
you couldn't know. You will know.
You will know.
Just precisely as in a dream, you don't know that you're dreaming.
Ha! You know,
checkmate.
Reality feels so lucid, like lucid.
Yeah, but also a dream feels so lucid. Like
no.
When you're leaving it, like, okay, wait a second. That's the thing. When you wake up, the moment you wake up and you relive the what your dream was, you immediately say, yes, that was a dream. But never, ever, unless, again, you are having a lucid dream, this is a big exception, but never, ever in the dream, you question, oh, this is not real. Never.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that you never do, because by definition, if you question it, you wake up, because you realize it is a dream, because the clues of your perception around you are very clear, are very evident. So that's the thing. What if waking up is the actual death?
Wow.
And what is, imagine if how life
it will be like we die and we're like, okay, now life starts.
Exactly. What if life is actually the sleep? Because if you think about it, it is
a strange sleep, very intense sleep.
A very strange and intense sleep.
A very intense for someone is maybe for someone is a nightmare, and for someone is like just a positive dream. This could be so interesting.
There is a
no way to test.
No, there are a lot of theories of life after death.
Yeah, I think the problem is that
there are a lot of
how theories. How can you test any of them?
I never read something. We could read something about this, but there are a lot of people that explain, maybe some people that were in like a sort of a coma and like explain what they perceive when they like arrived to the point they thought they were dying. So there are a lot of people that explain the stages,
mm-hmm.
like from where like you're like alive to where you're dying. But I also think it's really related to like being still alive, like still being alive. That I don't know. We should read something about it. It could be interesting.
For the next conversation, we can prepare. Yeah,
after death.
Exactly, we can prepare each one theory for life after death, and we can discuss it.
Of theories about
pros and cons. Okay, last question, because you're already at 1 hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
What is the meaning of life for you?
I have my personal meaning.
I've asked for your meaning, indeed.
I don't think there is like a real meaning. And I think that you could never know if, like, you found...
I've asked your meaning of life.
Okay. For me, the meaning of life is experience as much as possible, understanding as much as possible of this reality, and use my knowledge to help others.
Why?
Because helping, in general, makes me feel good. This is also why I choose therapy. Before, my meaning was helping with psychotherapy, but... Now I understood that helping in general is something that makes me feel good. I don't know why, but you know when something is good. Like talking about good or bad, I feel this predisposition for good. I feel when I'm doing good, I feel when I'm helping. I can feel when I'm doing something that is good. So for me, the meaning of life is try to understand myself as much as possible to know how to help others in every field that I will be good at. that can be psychology, but it can also be something else, but help people to live a great existence. Because what I think is that life, for some people, is one of the best opportunities we have to perceive one of the most beautiful experiences. And I wish that everyone had the vision I have of life. Because like the way I perceive life and the way I experience life is so intense that I wish like everyone could perceive it like this. So this is for now my meaning, but I am only 22, so
it might change for sure.
You now yours?
Well, my meaning of life is to I would say it could be described pretty similarly as to your meaning of life. If I have to say it in my own words, then I would describe it as the chasing of a higher state of awareness, devoid of suffering and misery, in full liberation of from human suffering, in order to help people conduct a peaceful and harmonious life. And this is probably the primary and maybe more rational meaning of life that I would give. The secondary and more instinctive would be to discover the meaning of everything. How can everything be the way it is?
Yes.
Have an infinite mind capable of infinite knowledge in a single instant of time.
Wow, yeah.
That would be dope as fuck.
You will be also scary.
Greta, it's 20 to 5. I would like to ask you, how many hours until midnight? 24? 9 hours. If these were the last 9 hours of your life, what would you like to do?
No, I don't know.
Think about it.
I don't know, because I live every day as if it was the last. But if now I will definitely these 9 hours, I will go to my family and my loved ones and stay with them and enjoy the love for the last time. So sad.
It's okay. It's an answer. All right. Greta, thank you for this conversation. Ciao. I will see you in the next episode.